What a beautiful day. Perfect weather for the Cobargo Folk Festival. Congratulations to the Ewan Folk Club and the community that pulls this terrific event together every year. You've done it again. Thank you so much for pulling our community together and pulling other communities to the Bega Valley. We meet on the lands of the Derrinjan people and I pay my respects to elders past and present. My name's Ian Campbell from About Regional, a new digital platform for the news and stories of southern New South Wales. I'm your MC for this next session. Co-housing and tiny houses are well-established housing options internationally, but relatively new to Australia. They're an innovative and collaborative way to create affordable and socially supportive housing and help build stronger communities across all demographics and needs. What is Bega Valley Shire Council doing to facilitate the opportunities for tiny houses, present and into the future? What are the barriers to the uptake of co-housing and tiny houses in both urban and rural communities in the Bega Valley? The community is, of course, a step ahead with a growing supportive network in the Bega Valley to explore and develop these new housing options. To feed our conversation today, let me introduce you to our panel. Our first speaker will be Ludo McFerrin, also Kathy Griff from Bega Valley Shire Council, and Rick Cuthbert from Tilba Tiny Homes. Thank you so much for turning out. Our first speaker is Ludo McFerrin, recognised internationally for her domestic violence work and workplace rights activism, and a member of the Bermagui Co-Housing for Older Women Project. Take it away, Ludo.
Hey, thank you, Ian. Good morning. My job today is to put this into some sort of context because it's all about this country needing really a housing revolution. And things that we've been talking about for a long time, like co-housing and tiny homes and lots of other solutions that are thought of as sort of peripheral to the main housing discussion in Australia, we have to make that mainstream. Because if we keep going the way we are, we've got a real problem. Now, let me talk about this problem specific to the area that we live in, the Bega Valley. Now, if you're going to profile who we are in the Bega Valley, without putting too fine a point on it, we're old and we're poor. That's your average Bega resident. And this is probably going to get a whole lot worse because the census forecasts tell us that we will, in the next 20 years, have some moderate growth in the Bega Valley, somewhere around 36,000. But 40% of that growth are going to be retirees. 40%. And we're actually going to see a decline of around 6% in the working age population in this shire. A real reduction in the people who can actually do the work. Now, I think that should be sending shockwaves around this whole region, that information. So if you imagine a graph, think about of the population, think about Little Goolaga and Big Goolaga, okay? So we start with the children, and that's Little Goolaga, and then there's a real slump, a real valley, and that's around the 20-year-olds as they leave the Bega Valley. And then there's a gradual slope upwards as people return or people move here. And at the peak, you've got the 55-year-olds to the 65-year-olds. So they're the peak, and then it slopes off as people die. That's the picture. In 20 years, it won't be a peak, it'll be a plateau. We'll plateau with a huge proportion of our population being retirement age. And I think that's a really scary thought. Now, why is this happening? Well, another reality about our population is that we have a bigger than average group of aged workers. So the sort of people, you know, in the sort of 40s and 50s, who in the next 20 years will themselves be retiring. And our percentage is bigger than the New South Wales average. Another reason, of course, is that this region is very attractive to superannuants from Melbourne, Sydney and Canberra moving down here. And we know who you are and you're snapping up all the accommodation. But anyway, you're welcome. But that's, I said that, was that, did that sound sincere? Yeah. Well, it's a bit hypocritical because I came here 30 years ago, but you know, I'm not from here either. But anyway, so there's several of the reasons why we're going to have this huge blob of very old people in this shire and a reduction in the people actually able to do the work. So, look, my question to you today is, how are we going to attract and retain working age people? I mean, there's lots of questions, but here's the question for today. How are we going to attract and retain working age people in this region? Now, obviously, the big ticket items are employment. Well, they can be employed to take care of us old people, but anyway. But also affordable housing, isn't it? So let's look at housing in this shire. And really it comes down to a couple of things, supply and affordability. So what are the housing options of this shire? Well, the bulk of it, housing is owned. Nearly 70% of houses in this shire are owned. There's nearly 20% are rented. And there's only 2.8% are provided under what's called social housing. So, you know, community housing, public housing, that sort of thing. And that's way below the state average. So we're not well supplied in social housing. In terms of affordability for renters, a couple of years ago, house rentals, a median rental in this shire was around $380 a week. Now that's only $70 less than the state average. When you think about Sydney rental prices, I think that's a bit of a worry. Also, when you think that we have a higher proportion, about a quarter of our population are low income households. And that means people who earn less than $650 a week. Now, of course, a lot of those will be people like me who retired and, you know, scraping out a living. But there's going to be a lot of low income younger people on that as well. And if they're having to pay $380 out of their $650 in rent, you can see where the problem lies. Now, it's not just about price, it's also about supply. And I'm sure all of us anecdotally hear a lot about the poor supply of rental accommodation in our shire. Here's another piece of information for you. At census, the middle of the year, in some parts of this shire, a third of the dwellings were empty. One third of the dwellings in some of our villages and coastal areas particularly were empty. Now, I think that's a problem if you've got people desperate for rental accommodation. And I think one of the solutions we've got to be looking for is a vacant property policy to free up some of those homes for rentals. So, do we need a whole lot of new land being made available for new housing estates? Well, here's some more information. At the census, the majority of households in the Bega Valley contained 1 to 2 people. 1 to 2 people. That was the majority of household types. The majority of homes in the valley had how many bedrooms? 3 to 4, right? So there's the picture. 1 to 2 in the majority of homes, which are 3 to 4. So here's the question for all of us to think about. Do we actually have a shortage of houses in the Bega Valley, or is it a mismatch? And what could we do about that? Is there a shortage? Well, I'll tell you, we know it. There is a shortage of medium density, 1 to 2 bedroom units and homes in this shire. And could older people like me, who are rattling around in a 3-bedroom house, could we be enabled to downsize to smaller dwellings, A, if they were available? And this will be a big issue for a lot of us aging when we can't drive any longer, because a lot of us are living outside of the village and we'll need to move back into the villages to access medical care and stuff like that, and because we can't drive. So are those units going to be available, and will we be encouraged to do so rather than discouraged? Now, I'm throwing this out as a Dorothy Dix, so I want one of you to come back and say to me, gee, Lula, what do you mean by discouraged? Because can I put the boot into a certain government about discouragement? So these and many other questions are what we're discussing now in a group of called the Affordable Housing Group, that's been tasked with reporting back to the council and other stakeholders about the affordable housing crisis. I think we can call it a crisis. And specifically, and here's the good news about this, we don't have to recreate the wheel, because just up the road, Shoalhaven's done an excellent affordable housing strategy. So we're looking at that and saying what works there could work here, and what have they missed that we could do in an innovative way here. So we can talk more to you about what they're doing up in Shoalhaven, good on them. But I'm going to pass on now to Cathy to talk about our dearly beloved council.
Thank you, Ludo. Some great stats from Ludo. I think what jumps out at me from what Ludo's just presented is 1/3 of homes in the Bega Valley empty on census night, and also that we live in a community of homes 3 to 5 bedrooms with 1 to 2 people on average living in those homes. The other thing that stands out to me about those stats is that we live in a world of isolation and loneliness as well. I can't help but think there's a relationship there. Our next speaker.
Yeah, thanks.
Councillor Cathy Griff, Greens Councillor with Bega Valley Shire Council, also the coordinator of Bega Valley Shire Council's Affordable Housing Working Party. Take it away, Cathy.
Thank you. Actually, I thought Ludo was going to be much more negative and I was going to try and cheer you up a bit. But now I can start with a sort of a negative note to remind you all that the whole of Australia is suffering with affordability crisis. Ironically, our regions are sort of presented often as the solution, you know, tree change, sea change, and we find increasingly it's not a solution. So affordable housing was often, solutions were often about urban areas, and now that is changing. People are realising affordability isn't much better here. So I'm not here representing council because we can't yet speak in a particular voice. But I am a councillor who knows really little about housing to date, but just sees it as you don't have to be too smart on the topic to realise it's a giant need. And there are a number of other councillors that have been wanting to do something about it. I can tell you briefly what I've been doing, but I also want to pay tribute to people like Ludo and Peter Kingston, I keep thinking there's a theatre guy called Peter Kingston, Robert Kingston, and others in our group that I'll mention in the Affordable Housing Working Group that have been working in this area for decades, Councillor Liz Seckold, and nothing seems to happen, and then nothing happens, and then later on nothing happens. So it's really, I can see and sympathise that it's such a frustrating area because it's so difficult and complex. So we're in a country that is the least affordable in the world. I think Belgium's about more, and we are less affordable than Paris and London. And partly it's to do, I think, with the fact that there is no overarching national housing policy. So you get all the different tiers of government. We're very often told in council, and it's true, that state requirements and regulations prevent us from doing something. And generally speaking, affordable housing comes firmly under states. But in the last decade, it's definitely true that local government has been stepping up and saying, this is more about our work. Because again, like me in council, it's just not being, there is not enough being done about it. So I raised a couple of motions. This is all a bit dull, but to just show that there was support generally from councillors. We looked at available land, that access to needs, and quite a few, we offered that up, but there was a lot of people in the sector saying that for various reasons that particular land wasn't what we needed. We found that there are a huge number of houses, social housing, that require repair and are sitting vacant, like 170 houses or something insane. And we started chasing facts last June, writing letters to the minister, and we're still ringing them just to show you how difficult this is. You'd think to get a figure about how many houses are sitting out there, but the fridge is broken or the windscreen, the fly screen's broken, is just one of those sorts of an example of that kind of really frustrating thing. In the old days, the repair team would be sent from Nowra, would fix the, you know, fly screen and then leave and ignore the fact that the window was broken. I mean, just those sorts of things have confronted us, and we've tried to say, firstly, find out what's happening, the actual numbers, and then do something about it. And Ludo mentioned the number of houses that are just vacant. I think it's about 23% in our shire. In Yirrabadella, it's like 43%. And because I represent the Greens, I can do an unashamed plug, not to tell you the details of their policies, but it is something the Greens have had long on their schedules. You can look up their policies. But what they have introduced that's begun in Melbourne is, if a house is empty for 12 months, shown by no water use and other services, that then that property pays more, has to pay more rates. It has a downside, but I won't go into the detail, but you know, that's the sort of thing that, that can be looked at. So we had two affordable housing round tables. They're a lot of fun. We gathered a lot of data, and it was partly to get the people together, because what we found is that we've got SEWACs, Southeast Women and Children Services, doing their particular issue is youth refuge, and it's a completely shameful thing that you have a crisis at home and you have to sort of find a way of getting to Maruya or wherever the nearest one is. So, but then you've got the social justice advocates, and they're doing some crisis accommodation. You have so many different people and areas that are all vital that come under that broad affordable housing umbrella, and it has become a role of trying to coordinate them to get action. So we would have liked a community group or person to stand up and say, we'll take the running on this. The group that Ludo referred to, an affordable housing working group, but they haven't. Any ideas are welcome. So I sort of coordinated, and there are two other councillors. That represents a third of the council, so it's got support. We don't have staff from council. This, they might be annoyed me telling you this, but it does show you that there are not resources being put in, into it at the moment. But we do have a new head of that section, and so I think called Dr. Alice Howen, so things may change. This is really important, because you will all appreciate that while affordable housing is really important to us, we've also got climate change, and really if we don't deal with that, houses are irrelevant. They're all going to burn or drown in them anyway. We've got the airport and the Eden Port and the Marimbula Ocean outfalls, and so there's a million other things that people could be doing. But I really want to assure people that the focus is increasing. And one way that is clear is that currently there is, they always give these reports really snappy names. This one's the Draft Rural Living Strategic Directions Report. But why you should care about this stuff is that you can find it online under the Have Your Say of Council. Because if just the councillors keep bleating on, and Ludo and a few others, it doesn't say to the council, this is something that really matters to our community. So I'm not saying in that particular report is on exhibition right now until about the 25th of March, I think. They've extended it. So if people here even just wrote a paragraph to say it's divided up in terms of particular locations, but you won't find affordable housing mentioned. So it's just to say, here are some things that we really think need to be incorporated in all of the planning investigations you do. But what I want to say, how's that nearly done? Yeah, just the last thing I just want to say is that, and I haven't had time to go into what some of the specifics are, but the planning department, he has got very possible, innovative and flexible ways of dealing with co-housing, multiple occupancy, tiny housing. They are really tending to welcome those kind of discussions. And this year, they will be doing a residential housing strategy. So that will again come for comment. And it will have something on affordable housing. But if the role of you, and you can just say to your friends, if you can just go in and make a short comment, those comments are read and listened to. They don't need to be enormously long or well researched. It's just to say, please do this. It is a really serious issue. And the last comment is, even if you actually know people yourselves suffering housing stress, you know, it's a terrible thing to push people up as a spokesperson, but nothing gets attention more than hearing personal stories about people that have had difficulty finding a suitable accommodation. So we'd be happy to hear from that. Our next meeting is early April of our working group, and I really hope to have some really more positive things to bring back to the community. And thank you to all those people that are working, you know, just for nothing and have done so for years on this topic.
Thank you, Kathy. It's great to have an action come out of a discussion like this. You guys have shown interest by being here, but Kathy's just given you an action. Head to Council's website, the Have Your Say section, and check out the Rural Living Report. Our next speaker, before we open up the floor to questions, is Rick Cuthbert. Rick's a builder based in Tilba. You've no doubt passed his business on the highway, Tilba Tiny Homes.
Thank you, Ryan. These two ladies, I think, did this a little better than I can, but they're obviously used to being up in front of a group of people. However, here we go. This is also a little bit more on a commercial basis because that is our business, building tiny homes. My name is Rick Cuthbert. I'm from Tiny Homes Tilba. Our business comprises myself, my wife, Kerry Stroud, Rick Coyle, and his wife, Jodie Coyle. Over the last 2 years or so, we developed an interest in tiny homes. developed an interest in the growing tiny homes movement throughout Europe and the USA. And saw it as a wonderful alternative to the ever-increasing housing shortage, which Ludo has mentioned there before, throughout in real estate in Australia, but particularly relative to us down here on this part of the coast. We established our business building tiny homes in January of 2018, just up the road here in Tilba. With a view to changing the face of low-cost, affordable housing on the south coast. When we delved a little deeper, though, when we were doing our research as to whether it was a viable proposition or not, one of the most disturbing facts that we came up with was that the largest demographic of homeless, particularly in regional areas, is over 50-year-old women. Now, I don't know if that's backed up in the census, but it's certainly something that has become quite evident. Our aim is to significantly grow our business in the local area, to further support local suppliers, tradespeople, and manufacturers, to increase employment opportunities in the area. Within the next 12 months, we'd like to at least be able to put on another apprentice and tradesperson. And we aim to build affordable, cost-effective alternative to mainstream housing in our local area. We would like to be able to work in conjunction with council and local community services and provide an affordable housing alternative in our shire. A little about our product. We build portable mobile dwellings as a viable alternative to traditional housing or caravans. We produce sustainable and workable standalone tiny homes with a filling of space, however, at an affordable price. Our aim is to build ecologically friendly housing with the potential to reduce the carbon footprint. And our tiny homes are durable dwellings of high quality with fuss-free and aesthetic features in alignment with quality residential dwellings. Our target demographic and aims are to meet the needs of the homeless due to hardship or displacement, to allow young couples the opportunity to save whilst living in a tiny home, either on their parents' property or on their own land. That's something that we come across all the time. There's just an inability to be able to save for a deposit for a house. Also, to offer alternatives to senior community members, and this is a growing concern, but by giving options of living with family members without the need for expensive renovations, additions, or dual occupancy housing. and also to address the growing number of aged homeless women who have limited savings due to life circumstances, who find themselves living in motorhomes, caravans, cars, couch surfing, or even worse, on the streets. Coming back to the over 50s homeless women, the factors that influence this particular group of people are varied. The major contributing factors are death, divorce, superannuation, and domestic violence. They're broad, aren't they? The death of a spouse or a partner and being left with a level of debt that was unknown to them is a common problem. The reverse mortgage is a contributing factor to this situation. Divorce, that goes without saying anymore. Superannuation issues arise from the lack of accumulated superannuation, or none at all, from years of bringing up children and consequently being out of the workplace for extended periods of time, resulting in no backup funding for their latter years. And lastly, domestic violence, or more particularly, escaping domestic violence, in whichever form it may be, physical or emotional. This is a major contributing factor to the short-term housing issues and is often overlooked by a large section of the community. The advantages of living in a tiny home versus a caravan: they are stronger and more durable. They feel more like a traditional home. They are insulated to the same standard as a domestic dwelling. They have standard domestic windows and doors. They have a sturdy and structural veranda and awning, at least ours do. They have guttering, water catchment and storage options, and greater stability in inclement weather. So they're a good standalone structure. The advantages of a tiny home over a granny flat or an extension. Tiny homes are fixed to sturdy trailers and as such can be easily relocated if the need arises. They are set up easily to connect into existing power and drainage. When no longer required, tiny homes can be on-sold at a reasonable return with little or no disruption to the existing dwelling. Some of the perceived problems for tiny homeowners, and this is where we need to have more discussion with council in particular, and this is broad spectrum, council and state regulations in relation to camping laws, because if you live in a caravan on site and a caravan and a tiny home basically come under the same sort of regulations, you're only allowed to live in them for a specific number of nights in a run. Some councils it's about 180 days, some councils it's only as short as 90 or even a couple of nights. So that needs to be addressed and tiny homes put into their own situation. There is no legislation specifically for tiny homes. As I said, they currently fall in between residential housing and caravans and camping. And legally, you are unable to tie down or anchor or make permanent a tiny home. So they have to be on a registrable trailer and capable of being moved at any time. Some options with future tiny homes, particularly in relation to housing for low-income section of our community. We have designed two options for emergency housing pods, one with an ensuite, a small table and bed, one with a kitchen, table and bed, but no ensuite. This second option would suit an area with a community bathroom and laundry facility. Incidentally, Gosford Council has also set up an area like this for tiny homes adjacent to their hospital at Narara, and that is apparently working quite well at the moment. There's only a limited number of tiny homes in there, and I really concur with what Ludo said there before about it would be too easy to create a slum if you weren't careful. So I think there needs to be quite reasonable planning put in place with that sort of development. Our motto at Tiny Homes Tilba is where quality is not compromised by size. Thank you for listening.
Thank you, Rick. Our discussion today, reimagining the housing dream, co-housing, land sharing and tiny houses in the Bega Valley, is happening within the context of the New South Wales election. We vote on the 23rd of March. And I wonder, has the election campaign inspired any action?
The Victorian government has a policy that if your retirement age is older and you're downsizing, you have a stamp duty exemption on that downsizing process. Great. Sounds smart. Takes away one of the great costs of downsizing. Took that policy to our current sitting state member and said, if Victoria can do it, we can do it. And that person said, yep, it looks good. I'll take it off to see our dear Premier. So we get back the results of that, and it was from the Assistant Finance Minister or someone saying, look, basically, we've done enough for you old people already. Now, I found this particularly insulting, given that this is a government whose budget, they say, is the envy of the Western world, and it's largely based on gouging money out of homeowners and home buyers through stamp duty. It's not about giving money to old people by giving them stamp duty exemption. It's about opening up 3 and 4 bedroom houses for 3 or 4 bedroom families or people that might need them, so that other people can downsize. So look, there's a lot going on. One of the things you'll find with state and Commonwealth governments is that at times like this, they'll say, oh yeah, affordable housing, we'll give you X million for social housing. And they do that regularly. And the last time they did that in New South Wales, I was finding it particularly galling because they said, we're prioritising new social housing for older women. And obviously older women's been one of my major areas that I've advocated around. The problem down here is that that will all then be funneled through a community housing provider. And they have to be big enough to deal to apply for that money and set up those projects. And in places like Shoalhaven, where they're really going ahead with this is partnerships, where the council provides the land, the community housing provider gets the state or Commonwealth funding to build the medium density units or something like that, or the estates for tiny homes. That's what they're doing in Shoalhaven as well. On land owned by council, but you've got to have a community housing provider that's big enough. We don't have that. So that has meant that time and time and time again, we've missed out in the Bega Valley on being able to tap into any of the state or Commonwealth money. One of the things we're doing is trying to do a partnership with that big community housing provider up north, that they will come down and partner with the Bega Valley. So that's one of the big obstacles for us to go ahead here. And it meant we've missed out time and time again. But yes, I'm sure there's lots of issues we could raise with our state candidates and then our Commonwealth candidates as well, because much more needs to be done. But don't just take, yes, we'll provide more social housing as the answer, because it hasn't worked for us.
One of the things I love about forums like this is you get to meet people in our community who are on the hamster wheel, and clearly Ludo has been on the hamster wheel on this issue for some time. It's really great to be able to put people like Ludo on the stage. Perhaps one more question from me before we open it to the floor, and it's perhaps a question for Rick. This idea of a tiny homes estate, we've heard about Gosford and Shoalhaven councils doing it. We've heard about concerns about these places turning into a ghetto. What does a tiny homes estate look like? What does a council, what does a developer need to do to create this space?
That's a bit of a hard question to answer in one respect, because I come from a traditional home building estate. I've built a few units and that sort of thing. Basically, when you set up an estate, we'll take it back to a caravan park. If you set up a caravan park, they're all set up in rows. Little laneways in between. They're quite clustered and quite claustrophobic, and traditionally when you look at a caravan park that's been existing for 30 or 40 years, the lack of maintenance with most of them is quite severe, and they're not really an appealing place to, not an inviting place to go and live, and there are certainly issues with some of them. When you set up a tiny home estate, our perspective on this is that it's got to be planned well. It's got to have a range of different homes in it, but also a different area. Like, you can't have rows, like specific rows. Certainly, from a planning point of view, that makes it nice and easy. However, I think there needs to be a bit more broad spectrum planning with it to get a much more appealing, like visually or aesthetically appealing estate put in place. And then obviously you need services, but there should also be plenty of parks and gardens and that sort of thing. And also I would suggest a community sort of area where people, you know, like-minded people could go and enjoy themselves. A bit like some of the over 55s housing estates that are out there. Incidentally, there's a group in Queensland, a group of developers that are lobbying council at the moment to be able to set up tiny homes estates up there. So it's a hard thing. It's a bit of a double-edged sword because we aim to, as a developer, we aim to be able to get the highest return that we can for our dollar. However, we've also got to be able to be socially minded and get the highest social outcome that we can for the recipients of the housing as well. Thank you.
Thanks, Rick. Luna, what does your experience bring to this question? What do you see in your mind?
Well, so we're looking at Shoalhaven. They've got this housing affordable strategy. And so one of the solutions they have there is that when you've got a new housing estate planned, a percentage of the accommodation on that estate, it has to be small. So tiny houses would fit into that. And it has to be affordable. So I think it's that idea that it's better to integrate a whole variety of housing types and affordability types into all new development rather than set up specific clusters of housing types. And I mean, certainly, I mean, Kathy referred to this work that Bega Valley's, the council's doing at the moment about opening up land in some of our villages for new housing estates. Now, I'm immediately suspicious about this because if you look at the forecast for where the growth is going to happen in our shire in the next 20 years, it's specifically villages like Bermagui and Tura. And if you look at where they're looking at to open up this new land, it's just about everywhere else but Bermagui and Tura. So these, you know, villages like Cobargo. So I'm worried that they know that there's going to be this a certain influx, and they want them to go places where they might not otherwise have gone. But I'm also really worried that all those new houses, and a lot of them will be just the usual mansion types, will be snapped up by superannuants. They won't go to local young people born here and trying to stay here, or young people trying to move into the area doing the work. And so we just compound the problem and just get these bigger estates. So good mix of diverse types of houses and diversity of affordability. I think that's they've got that right in Shoalhaven, and we have recommended the Shoalhaven strategy to this council. We hope to get down someone from Shoalhaven to talk about that. Hopefully we might get that to public meeting, and we'll get the word out, you know, so that we can build up a certain pressure on council, because it is actually, I mean, in the Shoalhaven report it says we have to do this because this is our statutory responsibility to do this. So I appreciate that Bega Valley Shire Council is a poor council. Very low rate base and but very big area with a lot of infrastructure and stuff, but if it's a statutory responsibility, we can't dodge this. And one of the things we're trying to get from Shoalhaven is a sense of what does this cost the council to do this. And my impression of looking at their strategy is it doesn't cost a lot, but it does cost something in terms of the contribution that the council staff have got to make to this. And when I talked to Shoalhaven about their strategy, they said this has to be driven by council. Politically, it has to be driven by council. So we've got to bring around those councillors who just go, sorry, it's roads, what is it, roads, gutters?
Rubbish.
Rubbish, roads, rates and rubbish. That's all right, you know, if you're talking about the 1950s, but we're talking, you know, we're talking now, and we're talking about the sort of population time bomb that I try to describe to you. So you can put your head in the sand, but it doesn't mean it's going to go away. Thanks.